tuned in to the Community Cats Podcast. Ready? Let's go.
Welcome to the Community Cats Podcast. I'm your host, Stacey LeBaron. I've been involved helping homeless cats for over 30 years with the Merrimack River Feline Rescue Society. The goal of this podcast is to expose you to amazing people who are improving the lives of cats. I hope these interviews will help you learn how you can turn your passion for cats into action. Today, we're speaking with Harry Ekman. Harry is Global Advisor for Cat Population Management at International Cat Care. He spent more than 25 years working in animal welfare. Most recently, he was CEO of the World Cetacean Alliance, the world's largest marine conservation partnership. Prior to that, he was the co-founder and CEO of Change for Animals Foundation and an expert consultant for organizations like the International Fund for Animal Welfare, Four Paws International, Human Behavior Change for Animals, and Dogs Trust. Throughout his career, Harry has worked with hundreds of animal protection groups around the world. His work has included stray animal population management, disaster response and preparedness, strategic planning and capacity development, lobbying to end wildlife in captivity and the illegal wildlife trade, campaigning to end the dog and cat meat trades, incorporating human behavior change concepts into animal welfare programs, and improving welfare standards in shelters and veterinary facilities. Harry was born in London, but lives in Portugal with his wife, three cats, and a dog. Harry, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Stacey. Wow, what an introduction. I sound like I've been busy.
You have been busy, very busy. Did I get World Cetacean Alliance? Did I get that correct?
Cetacean Alliance, yeah.
Cetacean, okay. World Cetacean Alliance. I'm going to have to look that one up, so I appreciate the clarification on that. And so before we jump in and find out all of this work that you've been doing over the last 25 plus years or so, how'd you get to be so passionate about cats? You have three cats. How are you so passionate about them?
You know what? I often think about this. I know a lot of people that work in animal welfare always dreamed of working in animal welfare. And everybody's got a story about, oh, when I was a kid, I always wanted to be a veterinarian. That I wasn't one of those people. I grew up with cats and dogs. I grew up with animals, always loved animals. But I never thought about doing it as a career and being involved in that way. My family actually used to run a bakery. So I grew up and I became a pastry chef and a cake decorator and ended up not liking that very much as a job and didn't really know what I wanted to do. And so when I left the bakery, just coincidentally, I happened to in a local newspaper see an advertisement when I was looking for something that would give me a bit more fulfillment. I saw a job in a local animal shelter in North London. And that was back in 1998. God, that makes me sound old. And that was just an incredibly enlightening and eye-opening experience for me. I had never considered that as something that you could actually do. And that started me on a trajectory of just being involved in animal welfare and being able to do with something with the love of animals that I always had. And because it was an animal shelter, it was dog and cat related. And so I kind of, even though I've worked, as you mentioned in the intro, on a lot of different issues, going through the root of all the work that I've done through my career has always been dogs and cats. Initially about shelter animals, but then working with unowned dogs and cats around the world. And it's just, I don't know, it's just been a passion and something that I'm always drawn back to.
So you have been involved in a lot of different organizations. And so tell me, what is the world like for unowned cats?
It's not great. I mean, I don't think that would come as any surprise. Depends which country you're in, to be honest. There are countries where it's awful because there are people that are going to catch you and potentially eat you. There are countries where you are left to fend for yourself or given scraps of food. And if it's touristic and seasonal, then, you know, in the summer months, you're probably doing okay. And in the winter months, it's desperate times. There are places where you're going to be picked up and dumped in a shelter and killed after 7 days, if that. And there are places where it's not a bad life, actually, where you have well-managed cat population management, where you have a coordinated effort, where there's funding for sterilization and a good TNR group and feeders managing colonies. It can actually be a pretty good life for a cat. But for the majority, that's not the case, unfortunately.
So should we be aspiring to get to that last scenario that you were just talking about? Is that reasonable to think, could we get to a world where we had a environment where trap, neuter, return was understood, access to spay, neuter, enough sterilization out there? I mean, is this even feasible?
Aspire is the right word, Stacey. Aspire, because when we talk about the number of cats there are, and depending on what statistics you read, it's like, what, 600 million unowned cats around the world, potentially. Like, realistically, what chance do we have of really addressing this on that scale? But if you, and even at a country level, it's whether it's the United States or the UK or Portugal, where I live in Portugal, there's potentially a couple of million unowned street cats. Like, how realistic is it for us to really solve that problem? Certainly within the next 10 or 20 years, it's going to be tough going. But if you then drill down city by city, neighborhood by neighborhood, at that level, I think we can really make a difference. But that's about communities getting involved and people getting involved and being kind of pragmatic and strategic about the approach, managing colonies and working with feeders and collaborating with municipalities. And so I think ultimately, yes, I think this is a reasonable and realistic goal to aspire to. It's not going to be easy. I mean, if it was, we would have probably got there by now. But even if it's difficult, I mean, what's the alternative? Just kind of leave cats to the way they are? I mean, I don't think we have any alternative but to aspire towards this kind of thing. And I mean, I work in a field that's called cat population management, and management's the key word. You know, it's not like some of the other issues I've worked on where we're looking to end the cat meat trade. So there'll be an end point, or we're ending wildlife in captivity. So there's an end point. There's never going to be an end point to cat population management. We're also always going to need to keep a check on it, whether that's responsible pet ownership, making sure that there's shelters in place that can, where people relinquish and rehome, and that the cats that do end up living on the street, if it's appropriate for those cats to remain there, are well managed and well cared for. So it's going to be an ongoing process. Even if we get to that end point where it's all wonderful for cats, doesn't mean we walk away and wash our hands of it. There's always going to be something to do.
Yeah, we've certainly seen that happen here in the States because of the pandemic and the lack of the opportunity for access to spay-neuter appointments. We've just regressed and have been challenged with keeping up with the cat overpopulation situation here. And it's not for lack of trying. There's so many people out there taking care of cats and they just don't have any access to care. Again, you're dealing with a variety of different countries in primarily in Europe and beyond, but do you see this as a worldwide problem, the veterinary shortage?
Absolutely. And your point about the pandemic, it's something that I see in other countries as well. The consequences of what happened in 2020 and 21, we're still dealing with them and we'll be dealing with the repercussions for many years to come, I think. There is a veterinary shortage. There is a capacity issue. But I think larger than that is there's a systemic problem is what we have with cat welfare. We look at where we can attribute blame for this. Whose fault is it? How can we solve this? And depending on where you sit, people will go, oh, well, it's the vet's fault. You know, they're charging too much, or there's not enough veterinary skills for this. Or people will look at feeders and going, well, they're supporting cats on the street. The reason why we have an overpopulation is because there's food being laid down. Or associations that are doing ineffective TNR campaigns, taking a scattershot approach rather than doing it strategically. And so it's very easy to point fingers. It's the simplest thing to do. Oh, it's the government's responsibility. It's the council's responsibility. But all of these things are not helpful, but they're also all kind of true. We're all part of this much bigger system. And in isolation, we're all maybe doing a bit of our part. But there are also things that we can't do. You know, we talk about veterinarians not being able to have the capacity to do it. But there's a reason why they don't have the capacity. There's an increase in veterinary costs at the moment that is really significant. And it's very easy to point a finger and go, oh, vets are charging too much. That's because things could cost more. And so we have to contextualize all of these issues, and it doesn't make it any easier, but it does mean that we are more in the mindset of trying to solve a problem rather than just pointing the finger and blaming somebody for a thing that they perhaps can't even do properly.
Right. And again, we need to create sustainable systems that are going to be going on and handling pretty much anything that can happen, whether it's losing veterinary access to the veterinary resources. And in the States, we have proposals for like a mid-level practitioner out there to be able to at least do spays and neuters of cats, or elevating the status of our technicians and enabling them to do those surgeries also. And so just trying to problem solve in a way so that then our veterinarians are able to spend more time doing the higher level items that they need to be doing to take care of their clients. And I believe that veterinarians don't necessarily need to spend their time doing rabies vaccinations in wellness visits. I think that they can be supervising, but their time is better spent in a full mouth extraction for a dental. And so trying to think through different solutions and how are we presenting our cats when we're trapping them, making sure that they are in the appropriate traps, making sure that the staff knows how to handle cats in traps appropriately, because some private practice clinics aren't comfortable working with community cats. And how do we make that process easier and a way for new graduates to be able to use their new high quality, high volume spay neuter techniques on the community cats to be able to do high volume spay neuter as they're becoming more practiced and trained in the surgical skills that are out there and comfortable with working with staff and delegating to technicians and just understanding the mindset of being a business veterinarian. How great is it that you can do that while working on a community cat and providing a great community service out there?
Completely. And I was having a conversation literally just earlier today with a veterinarian in Cyprus, and we were talking about high volume spay and neuter and this expectation that it's the vet that needs to be able to have the skills to neuter faster. But actually, it's really not about that. It's about the support structure around that vet. It's about having the next cat ready. It's having the recovery sorted out. It's about having the TNR group that brings those cats in, informing the veterinary practice well in advance of the cats that they're going to be bringing in and whether there is potentially any unforeseen things beyond just the sterilization that they're doing. So it's about this communication and this wider structure that needs to be in place rather than just pointing at a vet and going, neuter faster. And so it is much bigger problem than that and requires a different kind of thinking.
Yeah, I agree with you 100% that, you know, we ensure our veterinarians are doing what they should be doing, but that means they have to have the support staff and the trust in that support staff that they need. You mentioned Cyprus, so let me ask you, I believe you're working on a couple of sort of key projects. Can you share with us what you've been working on recently?
Yeah, absolutely. So my role at International Cat Care, we were given a grant last year by the Battersea Global Enabler Fund. Battersea is a big charity in the UK, and they provided funding for this three-year project that we're working on at the moment. The intention is it's going to be a much longer project, I would hope, but initially it's 3 years, and we are looking at developing kind of strategies and projects in five different countries. So the UK, Cyprus, Greece, Portugal, and Australia. And the intention with each of those is to get as much information as possible about each of these countries and the situation there. And we're doing that by obviously just seeing what we can find online, like legislation and published papers and all those kinds of things. But we're doing a lot of interviews as well. I actually just last week conducted the 100th interview across the different countries, speaking to different stakeholders, veterinarians, nonprofit organizations, charities, shelters, conservationists, local government, national government, trying to get as many different perspectives as possible on the issue. We're also going to be doing national public opinion surveys. And at the end of all of this data gathering and insight gathering that we're doing, we're then going to take all of that information and really try and look at and create a map or a system framework of what is happening in each of these countries. What is the situation with these cats? Why is it like this? Who are the key stakeholders? What are the opportunities for change? And what are the barriers getting in the way? And then looking at what we as International Cat Care can do to help that. It's not going to be entirely up to us. We're a small organization, but it's about having that structure in place, looking at where we can add value and looking at where we might be able to facilitate or assist local organizations or other stakeholders. So it's quite an ambitious project. And these strategies, we're looking, you know, as well as I do, that if we're really serious about addressing the cat welfare issue, this is not a 3-year problem. We're talking 10 to 15 years minimum. So these strategies are long term. But we kind of figured if we're serious about doing this, then this seems to be the right way to go about it. So it's quite an exciting time at the moment. I'm learning a huge amount about these countries and all of the nuances within them. You know, on the surface, there's quite a lot of similarities, particularly Cyprus, Greece, and Portugal. But as soon as you dig down, you realize that all of those different things are very important as to what a solution might look like. But this time next year, once we've got those strategies together, or at least the start of them, it's going to be pretty exciting to see what that leads to.
Have you ever wished you could speak cat? We can't promise fluency, but we can help you understand feline behavior like never before. Join us for Online Behavior Day on April 12th from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. Eastern Time, where top experts will share tips on tackling common challenges like vet visits, enrichment, taming feline fury, and achieving multi-cat harmony. It's fun, informative, and just $25 for access to the live session, recordings, and exclusive resources. Don't miss it. Sign up now at communitycatspodcast.com/speakcat. That's communitycatspodcast.com/speakcat.
Are you a proud cat parent looking for the perfect, affordable health care for your kitty? Well, look no further than the Community Cat Clinic, conveniently located in Woodstock, Georgia, just north of Atlanta and not too far from the Tennessee and South Carolina borders. The health and happiness of all cats are the top priorities at this feline-only hospital. From preventative care, spay, neuter, and vaccines, to specialized and innovative treatments like full mouth dental, ultrasound, radio, iodine therapy, emergency blockage cases, they've got your cat's well-being covered. For the TNR community and local shelters, they offer easy-to-access, low-cost spay-neuter services and volume appointments. So if you want to do a large TNR project, this is the clinic you want to go to. It's worth the extra trip. Appointments are available most days. Check out the Community Cat Clinic online at communitycatclinic.com or visit them in person at the Walmart Shopping Center at the Shops of Trichem on Highway 92 at Trichem Road in Woodstock, Georgia. More purr, less price. Are you getting your message across to your entire community? Do they know what programs you offer and what they can do to help? Learn more about how to effectively market your organization or just sharpen your skills with a free self-paced marketing course, The Fundamentals of Marketing on Maddie's University. The course is designed to provide a basic understanding of marketing and provide you with templates and tools to elevate and improve your organization's brand, voice, and audience, and have fun while doing it. You'll receive a strategic marketing plan template to download free. Go to university.maddiesfund.org and search marketing to enroll now.
In the States, I sort of have, I've been advocating the role of human social service organizations to play a supportive effort with our community cat supporters, put it that way. They really are outside the shelter walls or the adoption center walls. And so you know, things like having a microchip scanner at a library that you could just check out and use that as a way to check if there's a cat, a new cat in a colony that you're taking care of, check it out of the library, bring it and scan the cat. And that it totally eliminates you having to catch the cat, bring the cat into the vet, have the vet scan it, or bring it to the animal control and have them scan it. And then animal control in the States would be like, well, do I have to take it in as a stray hold or that kind of thing? And so just trying to think of simple integrated solutions within services that are already provided in the community. And then how do we overlay community cat programming? Think about like a food bank and have pet food and including people who are supporting a group of cats, not just your own personal cats, but I also support a group of cats and being able to provide cat food through that food shelf for the food pantry, rather than thinking we have to like own it as an organization. So just sort of trying to integrate our pet lives in our human lives. Is that something that iCatCare has been looking at also?
Absolutely. I mean, I think I don't know what the solution is going to look like in each of these countries, but I would 100% agree with what you said there. This idea that, for example, when I speak to somebody in Portugal or Greece and you say, who's responsible for solving this? They'll go, the government. It's like, well, you know, the government, how are they going to solve this whole problem? You know, or they'll go, oh, this animal shelter, they need to solve the problem. But there are so many pieces and moving parts within this. As you said, there are so many ways in which you have to look at what the problem is. So to use your example, you know, if somebody needs to get a cat from where it is on the street to a veterinarian to get it sterilized, the expectation is that maybe the Animal Welfare Association needs to do it, or the rescuer needs to do it, but maybe neither of them need to do it. Maybe there is a person with a car whose sole job is just to transport a cat from one place to the other. You don't have to create something that's already there. You just have to look at the resources that are available and go, well, you know what? This solves the problem. And it means that we're sharing resources, we're pooling resources, and all together we are fitting together so that we're completing this whole picture. And I really think from a community perspective, that's what we need to be looking at, is looking at all of the things that we have at our disposal already, rather than having to create new things, solving a problem that we could have already solved. And this kind of community engagement approach is key to this.
Yeah. And I didn't even mention churches or other community groups where there's a lot of involvement and advocacy and concern. And you and I both know that if folks are struggling financially and they've been given human food to feed themselves, they're going to feed their cats that food. And so we do have to acknowledge that, you know, we need to bring support in because folks are going to do it anyway. So basically, I think in our ideal world, we're working to have our social services, our churches, and other organizations within the community to be able to support our CAP programs, or they don't even really have to be programs. It's just individuals doing TNR. I was actually at a restaurant in Basel, Switzerland a couple of weeks ago, and I was mentioning a little bit to my husband, and a person next door overheard me. She goes, oh, you're involved in TNR. And I was like, wow, how do you know that? So we've been talking about sort of the normalization of trap, neuter, return, and how that is becoming the go-to option rather than thinking we're going to trap, remove, and euthanize, or we're going to just ignore. I think in general, in many communities, and obviously this isn't worldwide, and you're in a lot more places than I am, but people are learning about trap, neuter, return. Are you feeling that in Europe?
Very much so. And I think it's a really important step because a couple of decades ago, when we would be having this conversation, we'd be talking about sheltering. And I'm very glad we've moved away from that now. But now TNR does seem to be far more normalized. And I think your point of just changing the conversation around this and people getting more used to the language and the approach that we're talking about. Interestingly, you know, we talk about community outreach and education a lot, and how do we get people on board with things like TNR? And one of the things that I've seen consistently in all of the conversations I've had through this project and previously is, as much as we try and provide information to communities about the benefits of TNR, nothing shows it better than doing good TNR. And once communities see the effect it can have, both on the concerns they have about cats, whether that's overpopulation or nuisance, or the actual benefit of the welfare of the cats, they just are healthier and better looked after. Nothing is a better advertisement for TNR and it being a successful intervention than actually doing it. And then the community comes on board and they're the ones that are kind of going, oh, I see cats, there's cats down the street. You should go and do that here. And I think that's such an important thing that we should do. But I think there's a really important point, and it's unique to cats, that I find really interesting, is cat feeders. People who are regularly going out on the street, they're the ones that are caring for the unowned cats. They're the ones that are usually the most hated people, especially in areas where there's massive overpopulation. They're the ones that are putting food down and causing a nuisance. And they're often quite isolated. And even if you tell them not to, they're absolutely going to feed these cats. But these are also the people that hold the key to managing these cat populations. I think they, within our community, within our sector, within cat population management, they are our biggest asset because they're the ones that are going to be there every day telling us when a new cat turns up that needs to be sterilized, that's managing these colonies, that's making sure that things are being done well. And I think that we need to kind of bring them on board more and be part of this community rather than be these outliers that are just seen to be potentially causing this problem in the first place. And so that's kind of always been a bit of a bugbear with me, that people that could be so valuable are often the ones that are most ostracized within cat welfare and TNR.
I agree with you 100%. And I feel like they are also the group that may be given the fewest tools to be able to be successful working with the cats. So they end up feeling like they have to do their feeding undercover or hidden. And so maybe choices that would be made if they felt comfortable being out in the public and say, here's my feeding station, here are my shelters, and I come here and I keep it clean and that kind of situation. We give everybody the support that they need, like trappers have to have traps or cages. They have to do what they need to do to get the cats. Let's support each other with the resources that they need and bring it forward, bring it into the light. And so that then we can celebrate it. As you say, use a wonderful pilot program, make it successful. That's what we did in Newburyport in the 90s. 14 feeding stations managed by 35 volunteers twice a day. Everybody had to, back in the old days, we had notepads where we wrote when we saw cats and that kind of thing. Nowadays, everybody will put their Google pin in their Google map and whatever. But just to be able to work collaboratively and celebrate and not feel like you have to hide the fact that you are taking care of cats, because the reality is probably four or five other people are feeding those cats too.
Exactly.
So bring the community together so that they're not feeling isolated. And really, it's those cats that are the glue. And so sometimes if somebody says, oh, I think I have a stray cat in my colony because it's really super friendly, et cetera, I put a paper collar on that cat to see if anyone else is feeding that cat or if it's someone else's cat. And that's actually what brings the group together. The residents will be like, oh, I'm feeding Mellow Yellow. And then, oh, this is Marmalade and over here. And then they all discover that they're all taking care of the same group of cats. And then they can pool their resources. So if a cat gets injured, they can share in the cost. They can support on the food and the feeding and all of that. And just really helps build community, which, you know, these days we're just so much more isolated than we used to be.
Yeah, absolutely. I couldn't agree with you more, Stacey. And yeah, I wonder how many cats actually only have one feeder. Like, I would imagine it's very few. And the cats know this. Every evening, I take in my neighborhood, I take my dog for a walk last thing at night, and there's three or four cats around that I see every evening. And I've seen two different people feed these cats. And it's a very well-organized thing, but I think it's organized those people individually rather than coordinating. And if I'm honest, I'm probably the third person as well, because I always have a few cat treats in my pocket. And so the cats now associate me as well. But the good thing is, because I know there's other people feeding these cats, I don't feel that burden that I know a lot of cat feeders feel. It's like, if I'm not here, what's going to happen to these cats? Thankfully, I know what's going to happen to these cats because there's other people taking care. But I can see how you would get into that cycle of feeding and obligation.
Oh, for sure. Definitely. You understand. So, Harry, if folks are interested in finding out more about the work that you do, how would they find out about iCat Care?
They can go to the International Cat Care website. I think it's internationalcatcare.org. So that will talk about the work that we do. If they want to find out a little bit more about me and the work that I do, then they can look me up on LinkedIn. Just search for my name. Hopefully I'll be one of the few Harry Ekmans that come up. Certainly the only one that's working on cat stuff. So yeah, check me out there.
Excellent. We'll make sure we put those links in the show notes so people can find you very easily. Is there anything else you'd like to share with our listeners today?
Actually, yeah. So there was a project I worked on a few years ago. And again, if any of the listeners are interested in reading about it, it was a project that I did in Portugal, actually 10 years ago. And it was a really great project, cat and dog welfare, based in a small fishing community there. And it was a four-year project to really see working with the community and assessing the situation and kind of monitoring the effects of TNR on responsible ownership interventions and what would happen afterwards. And it took a really long time to put all of that data together and publish a paper. And earlier this year, I actually managed to publish the paper. So it's a really nice example of a project, but also it's an interesting example because it's quite candid of things that maybe didn't work as effectively and could have been done differently. And so I can provide you with the link to that, but I think it would be a nice thing to be able to share with listeners because it talks not only about the cats, but the community, but also elements of human behavior change that we try to interject into the project as well. So yeah, it'd be a nice thing to share if anybody's interested in reading it.
Sounds great. Excellent. We'll make sure we get it right into the show notes. Harry, I want to thank you so much for agreeing to be a guest on the show, and I hope we'll have you on again in the future.
My pleasure. Lovely to speak to you. Thank you, Stacey. Thank you for having me.
That's it for this week. Please head over to Apple Podcasts and leave a review. We love to hear what you think, and a 5-star review really helps others find the show. You can also join the conversation with listeners, cat caretakers, and me on Facebook and Instagram. And don't forget to hit follow or subscribe on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, YouTube, Stitcher, or wherever you listen to podcasts so you don't miss a single show. Thanks for listening, and thank you for everything that you do to help create a safe and healthy world for cats.